Ignition sequence start. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Liftoff.
Check, 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 check. I literally just create madness.
Boiler up.
I'm going to go off here.
They don't have a great quarterback.
I got to take a break. I'm getting in trouble.
To win the Big Ten, you first got to win the West.
Bad Bunny.
Have you heard his name in a while?
No.
Has it bothered you?
No.
Defensively, they got to come in with some confidence.
Is that even analytics?
I am in a parking garage. I'm kind of lost.
Terrence Shannon, Matthew Meyer, RJ Melendez, Coleman Hawkins.
These trumpet presentations aren't over.
I didn't come here to go 5-7.
I'm so proud of Illinois football right now.
I'm so tired of Joel Embiid.
We're not taking Patrick Corbin.
I want to bet the Bears.
Oh.
You are Reba McEntire's niece.
Roshan Russell.
Coach Bielma.
You no longer salute to yourself.
What?
We got all kinds of things for you here.
There's a lot of glass.
Oh.
Guys, we have breaking news.
Uh-oh.
It's the drive.
Smack dogs.
Thunderstruck. Thunderstruck.
The 2-1 pitch with two outs. Here comes to Adamas. A swing and it's popped up. Short right field. Tommy Edman goes out. He's under it. He makes the catch. It's a Waino Redbird winner. 200 career victories for Adam Wainwright, joining Bob Gibson and Jesse Haynes as 200 game winners in the Cardinal organization. Light up the night for Waino.
I do think that having to work as hard as I had to work for it made me savor it that much more. You know, it was a time where I really wasn't sure if I was going to be able to keep going, you know, or if they were going to even let me keep going. But I'm sure glad I got to, and glad I turned things around as of late. Try to, you know, maybe make some adjustments, figure out how to pitch with the stuff I'm working with. So that's one of the most fun games I've ever pitched in my whole life. You know, certainly will go down as a top three moment for me ever, you know, baseball wise. So glad I got to do it here in front of our fans.
Pretty cool stuff there. Adam Wainwright last night gets his 200th career victory there in St. Louis. Of course, it is the drive with Sam Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. Derek Piper, Kyle Tosk today. No Lonte. He'll be back tomorrow. Guess he didn't have anything to say about Waino. No nice things to say, huh, Lon? No, I kid, of course, but Wainwright last night, yeah, I mean, you heard that here on the Cardinals Radio Network, ESPN 93.5 for us, and a historic landmark for him, milestone in his career, something that he went into this season as a record to chase, as something to really go after this season. Of course, the wheels fell off this year for Adam Wainwright, and we've talked about how frustrating this Cardinals season has been, how frustrating it's been to watch Waino continue to get the ball throughout this season and post what had been a 8-plus ERA. He has been very good of late. He's able to win both of his last two starts against quality teams. He won at Baltimore in his previous start. He went 5 innings, gave up 2 earned to a really, really good Baltimore Orioles lineup on the road. Got the win there for 199. And then last night threw a gem, outpitched Freddy Peralta, who's been just absolutely fantastic this season. Waino goes 7 strong, no earned, 3 Ks, only 4 hits allowed to the Milwaukee Brewers. And the Cardinals win a 1-0 pitcher's duel. And cool celebration for Adam Wainwright, who, look, for as rough as this has been, I'm happy for Waino. I got to be able to remove some of the emotion of just the disappointment of this season and how much I've been just completely over the Cardinals and frustrated about John Mozeliak and then the news about Ollie Marmol and just not having meaningful baseball to watch for the last 2 months. But you really, Kyle, have no other reason to pay attention to this Cardinals team down the stretch, but Waino gave us one, and cool for him to reach that type of milestone.
Yeah, no question about it. It's cool to see any type of athlete reach a milestone like that. I think it's especially cool in baseball because you have more of those measurable milestones. I feel like in basketball, it's with LeBron, it's so rare to see a moment like that where he's topping the scoring chart. I don't necessarily think there's as much put on like, oh, he just scored his 30,000th point, or, you know, it's just tough in other sports. In baseball, you have these measurable markers to get to. And for Adam Wainwright, as a Cubs fan, I've always had a ton of respect for him. He's always come into Wrigley Field and dominated the Cubs every year, even the last few years. Maybe not this year, but dating all the way back to just last year. I've had a lot of respect for him. Seems like an awesome guy, a guy that is still pitching into his 40s. And it is cool to see with how bad things have gone for him this year to enter September just stuck on 198, and the Cardinals don't have much to play for. He's going out there and really getting shelled, but he finds a way to turn it around and pick up two more. That's cool to see anytime that type of thing happens in baseball.
Yeah, and he said in that clip he didn't know if he'd get there. He didn't know if the Cardinals would continue to let him keep going. Look, in any other circumstance, if he wasn't Adam Wainwright and he wasn't pitching for a team that was completely out of it, he probably wouldn't have gotten that chance. I mean, it's a guy that prior to these last two victories hadn't had a win since the middle of June. We talked about it a few weeks ago. When you look at the end of July through the start of this month, he had lost, what, 8 consecutive starts, I believe? I mean, the Cardinals in general had lost 10 of his previous 11 starts prior to winning in Baltimore and then winning against the Milwaukee Brewers. I did pull up a MLB.com article, which was written by Will Leach, and he mentions, just to kind of give you a little bit of perspective, there's only four other active pitchers who have reached the 200 win mark currently: Justin Verlander, 255, Zach Greinke, 224, Scherzer, 214, and Clayton Kershaw, 209. The next closest to reach 200 of active players would be Gerrit Cole, and he's at 143. Still a decent amount of years, you would imagine, left for a guy who's 33 years old. If he's going to pitch into his mid to late 30s, probably going to get there at some point if he stays healthy and whatnot. But that kind of gives you the context of how rare it is. And there's a select handful of guys that are able to go out there and reach this type of mark. Historically, he is the 122nd pitcher to get 200 career wins. And as I look back there, number one, like I've mentioned this many times before, and it's not, the sample size is still going to be too small to really even make this comparison. But I will say this, like, I love the fact that Albert Pujols went out the way he did for the Cardinals. And if Adam Wainwright can finish the month of September pitching at this level, and just to feel good about when he walks off the mound that he was able to fix some of the things that accounted for the fact that he's been getting roughed up. And look, if you only throw 85, 86 miles an hour anymore, you can't really change that fact. You can't really do anything to adjust a 40-year-old arm. But at the same time, if he's able to kind of finish on a high note, walk away with that 200th victory, and just feel like he accomplished some of what he thought he would going into this season, and just feel good about where he walks off and says goodbye, I'll feel good for him. And I think that outside of just the Cardinals fan base, I think a lot of people would want to see that for players that were some of the better players in a certain era, a certain generation. And for Cardinals fans, like, he's one of the best pitchers ever in the Cardinals organization. Bob Gibson, of course, is going to top the list. Chris Carpenter in my lifetime is one of the best, if not the best. And Adam Wainwright is right there up next to him. Someone that has never won a Cy Young. He's finished in the top three in Cy Young voting four different times. He's won a couple of World Series. Give him 200 wins too. That's pretty cool.
Do you think ending his career this way kind of validates coming back for another year for him? Because I feel like there was a lot of talk about how, man, he should have just walked off with Pujols and Yadi last year when they both got their standing ovation in the game that he started. Actually, all three of them did. And he comes back for another year, has a really tough year. Cardinals obviously aren't going to make the postseason. Do you think this kind of saves that? Do you think this validates it? Is it not really enough? Is it not a big enough milestone? I mean, the pitcher win stat's kind of gone away a little bit here, yeah. But I feel like at least in a way, in some way, it validates the fact that he came back this year and was able to do this. Obviously, if he ended up finishing the year at 198 or 199, then it would have really been tough to look back on that decision. Do you think it does validate it a little for him?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it gives him something to point to as something he accomplished in that final season. And that's a moment last night that he obviously will never forget, and something that he'll be able to hang his hat on as a career milestone, as something that he accomplished, again, for someone that didn't – he's been good enough to be a Cy Young caliber pitcher, but never had it aligned to where he was the winner of that award. And really from a Cardinals fan perspective, like, did I expect the wheels to fall off like they did this year in this type of a fashion? No, I expected it to happen at some point in terms of, all right, he's 41 years old, he's just going to be done. The Cardinals needed him to come back. Like, I had every reason of wanting him to come back. Where you look last year, and his ERA was 3.71. The year before that, in 2021, he was 17-7 with a 3.05 ERA. He has been so important to a rotation that has struggled with depth, has struggled with injuries, struggled with a guy in Jack Flaherty who was supposed to be your ace, who was never consistent enough or healthy enough to be that guy. Like, he's been a – maybe not a number one in a rotation, but sometimes he's had to pitch like one. He's had to be a guy that would take the ball in the start of a playoff series or just be someone that produces and is consistent enough to say, hey, all right, Waino, I know you're in your late 30s or you're 40 years old. Take the ball for us and – We got to ride you, even though really the timeline of most pitchers would say that, you know, you would maybe be a fifth starter for us in an ideal situation, even if you are still pitching. So I give him that credit. And I had that moment last night, and admittedly, there are going to be some Cardinals fans out there just so soured by what happened this year and the fact that Waino got the opportunities when really his production didn't warrant that. But in looking back, obviously he was outstanding when you look at from when he came into the league. He got hurt that 1 year. It was 06. He ends up coming back as your closer, has the epic curveball against Carlos Beltran to send you to the World Series, and ends up closing out the World Series against the Tigers as well. And then really through the meat of the 2010s was one of the best pitchers in the NL, if not all of baseball. And then down the stretch of this last go, the twilight of his career, really 30, 38, 39, 40, 41, when it looked like he was about to be done, he had a resurgence that was so important to this team to be able to make postseasons, win a couple more NL Centrals. And I give him all the credit for that. So it's almost kind of like the payback, so to speak, for just that portion of it, where he shouldn't have been able to do, in all likelihood, what he did the last couple of years and how badly the Cardinals needed it. And so you wrote out a situation where he was just getting roughed up start after start after start. And, I mean, it's easy when you're out of a playoff chase. It'd be different if the Cardinals were in this wild NL wildcard hunt and you had to take L's every time he went to the mound. The fact that it didn't kill you, that when he was getting killed and then now to let him have this moment, It's great for him, and I hope he finds that validation in it. Yes, in hindsight, it still would have made more sense in terms of going out on top or just feeling like you pitched at your closer to your abilities on your last year if he would have done that last year.
It does kind of encompass his career perfectly, though, like you said, where he was so good for so long, and then it right as it seemed like he was really falling off a cliff, he has that career resurgence in his age 39, 40, and 41 seasons. This year is kind of the perfect microcosm of that because he looked like he was done. Cardinals fans are calling for him to be pulled from the rotation. He can't keep putting this guy out there. And right when it looks like he's done, he's never going to get there, he finds two really good outings and gets to that 200 win mark. It is kind of the perfect ending, at least in my eyes. But that was cool to see last night. And it is cool. I will say the Cardinals do it right with this type of stuff. Like the little ceremony they had after there. Every fan for a team that's almost 20 games under 500, no fan got up and left after the final out. They all stood up, gave him the standing ovation. He got to say some words. And they celebrated in the locker room like they had just clinched the NL Central. I mean, it's just cool to have that kind of stuff happen. So I tip my cap for that, seeing some of the video of that.
He's got a couple of weeks now until he has that last start against Cincinnati.
And then he sings the three songs.
The three
after.
Songs, the concert. How about you can write a song about 200 if he didn't have one in the holster just in case. But how about a Mr. 200 song or something like that to unveil as one of his three, or just a little bonus track at the end. I'm not rolling my eyes at it. I'm personally not going to pay out of pocket to go see a Waino concert. But hey, I mean, you know, when you have that career, he's definitely got the reputation, the personality. And I love, like you said, I'm glad you pointed that out. He's a guy that I think nationally people are going to love once he's in the booth, assuming that's where he's going to go. throughout the next stage of his career. He's going to be really, really good at that, and that's something that a lot of people have grown to appreciate about him over time. He's funny, he's insightful, and I think that's something that is going to be great for when his playing days are done. We are going to talk plenty of football as we go through this show. We need to hit on NFL Week 2. We are going to have Aaron Lemming from the Bear Report, our guy, to break down what the heck is going in Chicago. Justin Fields, Luke Getsy, the offensive coordinator, just what's been some just brutal football through 2 weeks, and trying to get Aaron's perspective on that. I do have some thoughts, but it just kind of it bums me out. I did stay up way too late last night watching a film breakdown. JT O'Sullivan, the former quarterback. I don't know if you've seen the quarterback school. You see that on Twitter, and he does some really good stuff with film. And it was like an hour and a half long breakdown of what he thought of Justin Fields and the Bears offense against the Bucs, and some pretty terrible stuff in there.
Yeah. He does it right, though. I've watched some of his Tua content. He's very good.
He's really, really insightful. How he's able to, I mean, he's brutally honest, both in a good way, complimenting when a quarterback makes great throws and great plays, great reads. And then the other side of it too, like terrible play design, which the Bears have had, terrible blocking, and then Fields missing some wide open receivers too. And that's only half the problem. The Bears defense hasn't really been putting up too much of a fight either. So we'll get Aaron Lemming's thoughts at 4:30 as we go along with that. We do have some audio from the Illini football coordinators, Barry Lunny Jr. and also Aaron Henry, to get to you. And I do want to have a little bit of a conversation, just the importance of a convincing win for Illinois football going into this week, and what that could do for the fan base that is still just – I'm not trying to put everybody in the same boat here. I think there are differing opinions. Some obviously have already reached the when's basketball season start. And, oh, by the way, we did have the Illini basketball schedule release because the Big Ten dropped their schedule, so we can finally see the full picture of what Brad Underwood's sixth season is going to look like here in Champaign as far as the schedule goes. So we'll get you that as well.
Lon really decided to not show up on the day that there's like the most content to talk about all week.
I at least appreciate him for that, because it doesn't give us any kind of me and you got to stare at each other and figure out what we're going to talk about. Sometimes Lon, I'm not going to say that's when Lon's at his best, but we need Lon on days like that. Lon is a guy that can make a conversation out of anything, tell a story about anything. And when it's a dead day, that's when Lonte is needed on these airwaves.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, he brings the life.
He saves us in that sense. Not that I don't appreciate him when we have actually something to talk about. To cap off the conversation on baseball, though, I wouldn't be doing it right if I didn't actually talk about a team that is relevant in the postseason chase, and that being your Chicago Cubs.
Are they anymore?
Yeah, I mean, no, aren't they?
They are, but doesn't feel like that.
Was it?
They've done everything they possibly can to not be.
Five straight losses, unfortunately.
This is it. This week is it. You got the Pirates at Wrigley Field, and then this weekend you got the Rockies at Wrigley Field. You win 4 to 5 of those games, you're going to be right in it that last week of the season. Anything less, and you probably completely handed your playoff spot away. So here we go.
You look currently at the wild card picture. You've got Philly in the top spot in the wild card, 4 games above the cut line. They should be all but safe, you would imagine, barring some epic just falling out in the last 2 weeks of the season or so. The D-backs have jumped over the Cubs. They have a half-game lead over Chicago for that second spot. The Cubs and Reds tied both at 78. Well, the Cubs are 78-72. The Reds are 79-73. Same winning percentage there at 52%. And then you got Miami still in it, half game out in terms of the cut line. You got the Giants still kicking there, 2 games out. So what is your – you mentioned it there with the opportunities – both at Wrigley Field in terms of being on your home field and playing some really bad teams, and the Pirates and the Rockies. Rockies did win 2 of 3 over there in Coors.
Of course they did.
Yeah. What's your panic meter at?
Oh, it's at like a 9 out of 10. I'm not even overreacting to that. Like, one of the biggest problems you look at here is the Cubs don't hold the tiebreaker over anybody. So really, when they're tied with a team, they're a game back, because the MLB got rid of the game 163 where you tied, you play a game to get in. They do tiebreakers now. Cubs don't have the tiebreaker over the Marlins. They don't have the tiebreaker over the Reds. And they definitely don't have the tiebreaker over the D-backs, who just won 6 of 7 against them in the month of September. So they have to figure things out. I mean, they had a 2.5 game. Actually, they had a 4-game cushion on being out of the playoffs a week and a half ago before that series against Colorado started. And now they are tied with the Reds for the last spot. And really, like I said, they're out. If the playoffs ended at this, if the playoffs started at this moment, they wouldn't be in it because the Reds would hold the tiebreaker. My panic meter is at a 9 out of 10, and it's because they're playing awful baseball right now. They reverted back to that May time period where they just can't get anything going offensively. The pitching, which they had relied upon for so long there, all of a sudden, everyone's kind of getting roughed up at the same time. Justin Steele has his worst start of the season when the Cubs needed it. Kyle Hendricks has not looked quite as good as he did back in August and early September. Javier Assad, who was great for a long time, is showing why he's, you know, he was in AAA for a while. It's not good right now, and they got to figure it out. And if there's any time to figure it out, it's when the Pittsburgh Pirates come to Wrigley Field the next three nights. They need to sweep the series to get back on track and put themselves in position to be in the postseason.
Marcus Stroman has been pitching out of the bullpen. What are you expecting out of him, and how has he looked in his couple of outings?
He's looked fine. Getting him back at all, I'm surprised about. I thought he was done for the season. I think he's done starting for the season. I don't think there's really – I think they're he's kind of working out of the bullpen so that he can pitch. I don't think they're comfortable with him being a starter right now, but he's – looked okay. If he can give you some innings out of that pen, if he can give you a long relief option, especially if you have to start like Javier Assad, Jordan Wicks, these younger pitchers who aren't as stretched out, and he can come in kind of piggyback them, then that's what could be very valuable. But I don't know. It's tough. The bullpen in general, like Alzolay's on the injured list right now. Fulmer's on the injured list right now. The bullpen is really struggling too. It's just that they got so hot there and put themselves in great position, and then at the exact wrong time, they reverted back to that May stretch. Mm. And it's really tough, but again, you got a great opportunity this week. It's really still, they really still control their own destiny here, because then they also got Milwaukee at the end of the year. Not that they're going to catch them for the division anymore. That's out the window, but they have all the opportunity in front of them, but they have to find a way to start playing better baseball.
Last one on the Cubs. If you could pick one guy to just go nuts this week in that lineup against the Pirates and the Rockies, who would be the most important going down the stretch?
Dansby Swanson. He's been bad for the last month and a half. He's been flat out bad at the plate. He needs to get going. And that was so important when the Cubs were hot. He was hot. He was hitting homers. He had that power surge back in early August that really sparked the team. And he has just looked kind of lost recently. If he could get going at the plate these last 2 weeks, that'd be huge.
Good stuff. If you want to win, you can. 217-359-2255 on the U of I Illini Link text line. We'll pivot. Let's talk some hoops when we come back. Let's talk about that schedule release for Illini basketball, what the Big Ten conference slate looks like. I will give you a little bit of a teaser. That December is a tough one. It could be some tough sledding for Illinois in December. We'll be very interesting in terms of opportunities, obviously, when you already have the Jimmy V Classic against Florida Atlantic baked in there on the road at Tennessee, and then you draw your first Big Ten game, and it is on the road there in December. We'll talk more about that on the other side of this break. And then the 4 o'clock hour, we'll go heavy on football. Got some audio from the coordinators. Aaron Lemming from the Bear Report will join us at 4:30, and we'll talk more about some other takeaways from the NFL Week 2 slate. A lot to do. Stick with us. This is The Drive.
Frankie at the gym says, "Do you even lift, bro?" Frankie at the Champaign County Humane Society doesn't care how much you lift. He just wants to lay on the couch with you and watch reruns of The Office. Carol in accounting will probably judge you for heating up your leftovers in the office microwave and stinking up the entire break room. Carol at the Champaign County Humane Society doesn't care what you eat, just as long as you scratch that one spot right under her chin. Carol the cat and Frankie the dog are just a few of the adoptable pets looking for their forever homes at the Champaign County Humane Society. They won't judge you for the food you eat or your workout routine. They just want to shower you with all the love they have to give. As the only open admission animal shelter in our area, the Champaign County Humane Society takes in any animal despite their age or medical condition. Learn more about adopting a pet, volunteering your time, and donating to the cause at cuhumane.org. The Champaign County Humane Society, where your new best friend is waiting.
When Ross went out, I always told him to be careful, and that was the last time I got to see him.
Because someone didn't slow down and move over. Ross had on a bright orange shirt with reflective stripes the night he was killed.
He always had that smile. He just lit up the room when he came in.
Slow down and move over when you see flashing lights. Everybody is somebody, somebody.
When you see lights flashing, use caution passing. Let's all go home safe tonight.
In an ever-changing real estate market, it is so important to work with experienced agents like Russ and Nick Taylor with the Taylor teams at Taylor Realty Associates. They have the knowledge and expertise to get your home sold for the most amount of money in the shortest amount of time. Trust the experience and success of Russ and Nick Taylor with the Taylor team at Taylor Realty Associates. Give them a call today at 217-355-0700 or visit them online at taylorboys.com. That's taylorboys.com.
Here's the deal. When you combine State Farm home and auto insurance, you can save an average of $889. The Brian Hansen State Farm Agency is ready to help you combine home and auto and save in Champaign-Urbana. Call 217-344-1900 today. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Average annual household savings based on 2019 national survey by State Farm of new policyholders who reported savings by switching to State Farm.
A biker, a Baptist minister, a Catholic priest, a veteran, and a farmer walk into a trucking company. Sounds like the beginning of a bad joke, doesn't it? Well, it's not. It's the diversification of the driver force at Gale Ferrix Trucking. At GFT, we welcome all qualified Class A CDL holders. So if you have 2 years of experience or less with military service, a clean driving record, and a positive work ethic, we want you to fill one of our three open regional van positions today. You will have every weekend at home and earn the money to enjoy it with our $1,200 weekly gross pay guarantee, in addition to all the other great advantages GFT offers. During the month of September, we are paying a $4,000 sign-on bonus to experienced drivers that want to work for a company that works as hard for them as they work for us. Call 765-793-7131 or email timo@gftlog.com. 765-793-7131. Or email timo@gftlog.com.
At ABC Heating and Air, it's our promise to help you always be comfortable. Do you need rescued because you're burning hot? Do you need rescued because your air is shot? Call ABC Heating and Air at 352-5400 and let us rescue you from the heat. ABC Heating and Air, 352-5400. Can't you see you need to call me at ABC? Call ABC Heating and Air. That's ABC Heating and Air, 352-5400.
Hi, it's Stevie J. Sit back and relax and take the drive with Lante and Derek Piper. Weekdays 4 to 6 right here on ESPN Radio 93.5.
Back on the drive with Sam Piper, ESPN Radio 93.5. Let's talk some Illini basketball. The Big Ten dropped their schedule release for the upcoming season, so we have the full picture now. No TV designations or times quite yet, but in terms of the games themselves, we know the dates they'll be played and what opponents the Illini are looking at throughout their full slate for this season in 2023-2024. So let's dive in and see exactly what that looks like. Let's do the Big Ten games, and then we'll kind of zoom out and do the entire conference picture. But in terms of the Big Ten opener, we always know that it will come there in that early season, usually early December. I will say a difference this season versus previous seasons, it's usually been two Big Ten home games early. This year it's only one, and it is on the road. It will be at Rutgers for the Big Ten opener December 2nd.
Did they change that conference wide where they're only kind of sticking one game, or is that just Illinois was like a lucky one that only gets one?
I think Illinois is one of the few exceptions, okay, just based on the way their other schedule stacked up. I can't remember.
To see that.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know who it was last year. I feel like there was a team, maybe two teams last year that only played one of those early Big Ten games, and their second one was on the front end of January. But this year, Illinois' Big Ten home opener will not be until early January. Other squads will play two there in December as far as both a home and away game. But because of the Jimmy V Classic, you've got the at Tennessee. You're kind of loaded up there in that December area. They did move the Colgate game from late November then now to December 17th. That makes sense, and it kind of tipped me off that maybe they were thinking about another road trip in terms of you had a New York City trip for Jimmy V, you had Tennessee, then if you throw in a Big Ten game, particularly on the road, that could really clog that thing up. And Colgate's a decent low-major team that shoots the three really well. They've gone to the tournament the last 3 years. Not to say that Illinois is going to lose that game, but moving that one, and then now you're going to play your first Big Ten home game January 2nd, and that will be Northwestern coming to town, the Wildcats, to kick off the home slate for Illinois in the Big Ten just after New Year's Day. You have at Purdue January 5th. January 11th, you get Michigan State, and then another quick turnaround home game January 14th. You have Maryland at home. At Michigan January 18th. January 21st, you have Rutgers. January 24th, you have at Northwestern. January 27th, Indiana at home. January 30th, at Ohio State. Let's stop there and discuss what we have so far. So the early game in December at Rutgers, and then the January's schedule, Northwestern at Purdue, MSU, Maryland at home, at Michigan, Rutgers at home, at Northwestern, Indiana at home, and at Ohio State.
Interesting for sure. I think the biggest thing that stands out to me is how much you're going to find out about this team in early December, much like we did last year in kind of a negative way. I mean, they did beat Texas in early December, but that stretch there, that road trip at Rutgers, Madison Square Garden against Florida Atlantic, at Tennessee, that's three really tough games. You get one of those three, I think you feel pretty decent about it. I believe, is Rutgers still the only place that Brad Underwood hasn't won here at Illinois?
That's Maryland. They won once.
They did one.
It was one of his first years. Yeah.
That's right. But it's been a really tough place for Illinois to win. It's been a really tough place for anybody to win. And I don't necessarily think this is going to be some great Rutgers team, but going at Rutgers is really tough. And then that's right before you got your two really big tests there away from home. So that stretch is going to be interesting. It definitely is interesting that they don't get the two Big Ten games, because then you could be talking about four in a row if they did squeeze another one in there.
Yep.
You do get the relief of Colgate before that bragging rights game. But yeah, then, I mean, you get thrown right into the fire because you got Northwestern at home, who I think it'll be a solid Northwestern team, is going to have one of the better players in the conference. Then you go at Purdue and Michigan State back-to-back in early January, the two best teams in the conference preseason. It's not easy. The whole schedule isn't easy. We talked last year about how, hey, Illinois got a pretty favorable draw here. Well, they kind of got paid back this year because I think their schedule is one of the tougher in the conference, and they don't get really much relief early because they get off and running with some of the top teams in the league.
Yeah, well, I went back and looked at that today. The bottom four teams, all the teams playing on Wednesday of the Big Ten tournament, it was Ohio State, Nebraska, Minnesota, and who was the other one?
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin, good call. Those four teams, Illinois, all played twice last year. This year, when you look at the bottom five projected based on Bart Torvik, you have Penn State, Minnesota, Michigan, Rutgers, Nebraska. Of those five, Illinois only plays two of those twice, that being Michigan. You'll get both in Ann Arbor and then here in Champaign, and then Rutgers and Piscataway, and then here in Champaign as well. But we know the RAC, also called Jersey Mike's Arena, has been a very tough place for anyone to go and win, in particular Illinois. They've lost their last three trips there to Rutgers. They did lose. They had a rough offseason for Steve Peichel and company when they lost two guys, not only just them transferring, but when they did it. They did it. Cam Spencer, their shooter, who was a transfer coming in and was a nice three-point threat for an otherwise pretty challenged shooting team. He decided in mid to late May to hit the portal and then transfer to UConn. And then Paul Mulcahy, very end of the summer, or I should say very end of the spring going into the summer, kind of when you expected the offseason to kind of start to dial down, he goes into the portal, ends up at Washington. So combine that with Caleb McConnell being gone, who was the co-defensive player of the year last year. Rutgers loses a lot, but they still do have Cliff Omorui, and it's going to be a tough place to play as well.
It might be the last year before Rutgers starts really getting some attention, because they may have the two top prospects in college basketball coming in a year from now.
Isn't that crazy?
I mean, Steve Pike will give him some credit. I know he's got an easy in there with Ron Harper Jr.'s mm-hmm. brother, but that is that's incredible that that's even a talking point. I mean, I believe Harper isn't committed yet, right?
Correct.
It's Bailey that is committed to Rutgers.
Right.
But it looks, all signs point to the fact that they're going to get both.
It's still pointing towards Dylan Harper going to Rutgers, as far as I can tell. I know that Duke is in there as a finalist. I read some stuff that Kansas was trying late, but the crystal ball picks and the buzz still seems to be that Rutgers is the favorite. And I did find that interesting because I was like, did Ron Harper Sr. go to? Although I don't know if he's a senior, but anyways, Ron Harper, the older version, did he go to Rutgers? He didn't. But so I was like, why would there be such a strong loyalty to get the other son as well? But I mean, Ron Harper Jr. had a really good career there, and they must be stationed out there in the Northeast. But that would just be something that would just send shockwaves through college basketball to see two of the top players in the country, like two top five players, end up going to Rutgers. Would be wild. Of course, fortunately for Illinois, they will not have them this year. I think that stretch, like you said, will be very, very telling of this team. And I think the result of the Marquette game there in the middle of November, you do get it at home, but it is one of the toughest games you'll play all season. I mean, that was a really, really good Marquette team last year that was a 2 seed in the tournament. They were the final team to beat UConn when they beat them in the Big East tournament, and they won the Big East tournament. Tyler Kulik's back. They got a handful of other guys back from that team. If you win that game, that's a really, really nice win on your resume. If you don't win that game, I think early December is all the more important, because then you need to kind of pick up some slack with winning at Rutgers, winning one of either Florida Atlantic and the Jimmy V, who's a Final Four team that brought back like 7 of their top 8 players from last year. And then Tennessee was a pretty darn good team in their own right last year. Preseason, you look at Bart Torvik and other people who have done the projections, the way too early top 25s, they're considered a top 10 team. And playing at Tennessee isn't considered maybe the most daunting of home court advantages or going into that type of road environment. But I was looking it up for when they played Arizona in the non-conference 2 years ago, and they played Texas last year in the non-conference. And they had 20,000 plus for both of those games. So
I was going to say, isn't their arena huge?
Could be a raucous environment. Yeah, it's huge, and it'll be a non-football Saturday there in Knoxville. So that could definitely be – I mean, it will be a very, very tall task for Illinois. Not saying they can't win it, but it will be a tough one. To circle back to January as well, I agree, like, the front end of that Big Ten slate, as you think about the standings – the fact that you get Northwestern January 2nd at Purdue, Michigan State at home, and Maryland at home. Those are all projected to be, that's 4 of the top 6 if you look at Bart Torvik as far as what's expected to play out in the Big Ten. Northwestern, they do lose Chase Audige, which is a huge loss and was really an unexpected development when he entered the draft and decided to stay in. Didn't get picked, of course, but Boo Booey's back. They really good defensive team. And what stands out to me about that stretch is you get 3 of those 4 at home. You're going to have to do some work on your home court because you're going to face those other teams, Northwestern, Michigan State, and Maryland, down the road at their place. So being able to take care of your home court, I think, is really, really important. You said it there, Purdue and Michigan State thought to be the top 2 teams in the league. I think Maryland's going to be pretty darn good in their own right, too.
I couldn't agree more with that. I left off Maryland. I was focused on Purdue and Michigan State. I should have mentioned Maryland because I think that they're flying under the radar. They get almost everyone back from a team that I know couldn't win on the road for their life last year, but was a very good team, a solid tournament team, and their freshman class is awesome.
It is.
I think they could be the number 3 team in the conference, and in that case, you're playing 1-2-3 back-to-back-to-back.
Yeah, I think they have 3, maybe top 75 freshmen coming in. You get Dante Scott back. He seems like he's been in the Big Ten for about a decade. Obviously, Jameer Young returned as well. They did lose Hakeem Hart, but they also have Julian Reese back. And now he's a junior. You would imagine that he's going to take another step forward. And I thought Kevin Willard did a pretty darn good job with that Maryland team last year. Like you said, they didn't win on the road. But that is thought to be a contender in the upper tier of the Big Ten, at the very least. I'm curious your thoughts before we move on into February. You go to the middle to the back half of January. What do you think about that road trip to Michigan?
I don't think Michigan's going to be very good.
They shouldn't be. I wouldn't imagine.
At the same time, it's always a tough game to go to Michigan. I don't know. 6-0 against Juwan Howard is 6-0 against Juwan Howard. I don't know. I don't think Michigan's going to be a terrible team. I think it's going to depend on what Kamwa does there. If he can turn into kind of a star, all Big Ten caliber guy. They have the guard play, which is something that Illinois doesn't have in terms of you go on the road in January and, you know, Doug McDaniel and Llewellyn there at point guard gives them an advantage. But I'm going to ride with Brad Underwood owning that Michigan program as long as I have it.
You would hope you get a win there. Rutgers at home at Northwestern. The lone Indiana game. I'm bummed out because I always love going to Bloomington, watching Illinois and Indiana. But the Hoosiers will come to Champaign January 27th. Will be very, very interesting to see what life after Trace Jackson Davis and Jalen Huchefino looks like for Indiana. But they'll have some talents. They'll have a good front court. I know that for sure. You get Khalil Ware, the transfer from Oregon, who was one of the top players in the country coming out of high school. It was disappointing last year in terms of production at Oregon. They got Sparks, the transfer from Ball State, who was very productive there. We'll see ultimately what that Indiana team looks like, but that will be your game between the rivals, the only one on the schedule, again, January 27th, then at Ohio State, who I think will be better. I'm still shocked for as much talent as they had that they went on a stretch of losing like 13-14. And this is a really important year for Chris Holtmann. A lot of people, if they don't at least make the tournament, if not make a big step forward, will be calling for his job. So that's a big one. And one final note before we move on. Another thing that when you look at Illinois' resume last year, we all know that if Illinois didn't beat both Texas and UCLA on a neutral court, they weren't going to the tournament. You could maybe argue if you take away one of those, they might not have gone to the tournament. They didn't have very much success at all on the road in Big Ten play. They were 3-7 on the road, and their three wins were against non-tournament teams, Wisconsin, Nebraska, and Minnesota. So being able to beat a team like Michigan on the road, I don't know if they're a tournament team, but Northwestern, who will have a chance to go back to the tournament, Ohio State will be potentially in contention for a tournament spot. You'd love to win at Purdue. That will be a very tough one, but Illinois does need to do a better job of, number one, racking up wins on the road, but winning a couple that will actually look decent on your resume too.
Yeah, no question. That's something that they did so well there for that three-year stretch. Obviously, it helps to have Io and Kofi as part of those teams to go get road wins in the Big Ten, but that was something that this Illinois team was tops in the country at, going on the road and getting quad one wins. And last year they didn't have that, but the schedule sets up pretty similarly for them this year, where they're going to have a lot of opportunities in the Big Ten, but they're also, if they do come up short there, they're going to have opportunities to save their resume in the non-conference. So they're going to have to find, I think, more of a balance than they did last year in that, on that front.
You go on to February, you will have two big chances. We were just talking about being away from home and having a chance on a opponent's home court to get a quad one win. You'll have two of those in February. Let's start. You are at home starting February the 4th against Nebraska, then a huge one February 10th at Michigan State. Michigan comes to town on February 13th. Then you're at Maryland. So you look at both of those. Those are huge games, both quad one opportunities, you would imagine. February 17th at Maryland. Then you're February 21st at Penn State. Penn State's supposed to take a pretty massive step back. Mike Rhodes' first year there, the former head coach for VCU, now going there. After Michael Shrewsbury goes to Notre Dame, but did get a couple of nice transfers, including the point guard. I don't know why I can't think of his name off the top of my head. Ace Baldwin, who was both the player of the year and the defensive player of the year, I think, in the A-10, a point guard that Illinois had some pretty high interest in the portal, but he ends up going and following his head coach to Penn State. But outside of that, you'll be happy to learn, if you had forgotten, no Andrew Funk, no Jalen Pickett, no Seth Lundy. A lot of those faces that made life miserable in the three losses to Penn State last year are no longer going to be there. So that is the good news on that. February 24th, Iowa comes to town. February 28th, Minnesota comes to town. Any overall thoughts about February that stands out?
All these months are pretty tough in their own right. You got some tough home games in January. You got some tough road games in February. the months seem pretty balanced. I don't see the thing about this schedule just in general is I don't see a whole lot of soft spots. Not that there's a ton of terrible teams in the Big Ten, but I feel like Illinois a couple times last year had stretches where, okay, we got four straight against non-tournament teams. And I think they did win four in a row against like Nebraska, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and someone else last year. This year, I don't see those that stretch on the schedule where it's like, all right, here's some breathing room for you. It's maybe get one game against Nebraska there, and then boom, you're at Breslin Center against Michigan State. This is a tough schedule.
No, that's a good point, because you look at some of Brad's previous years, and yes, he's had some really, really good teams, which have played into that as well, but they've gone on winning streaks. They've been able to reel off five, six, seven. Obviously, you go back to the year when they were a one seed. I think they won, what, like 12 in a row at one point? So to be able to pull that off, or 12 in a row would be just incredible, but even to win, you know, three, four, five in a row, that will be a tougher test when you don't have it set up where you get, like you said, two cupcakes maybe at home, maybe then you play at Minnesota or what have you. It's a little bit more of, all right, here's a game you should win, and then, like you said, then you're on the road, and it's either a toss-up game or going into a opposing arena like Breslin where it's a very, very tall task. So let's look to March. There's three really juicy matchups there to finish out the regular season schedule. You have at Wisconsin, March 2nd, the only time you play the Badgers this year. Then you have Purdue at home, March 5th for Senior Day, and March 10th at Iowa is your regular season finale.
Give me all the Illinois-Iowa final game of the season matchups that we can possibly schedule. That is awesome. I love that. That is perfect. The last two times that's happened, obviously they've both been in Champaign, and they've both been electric games that have gone Illinois' way. Now Illinois goes to Iowa, but that should be a really fun, high-energy last game of the year. I think both teams will be in the mix for the tournament. Should be a really good one. I love that.
I want to get your thoughts, and I'll weigh in as well, on both Iowa and Wisconsin going into this year. So Iowa should on paper take a considerable step back when you look at the fact that they don't have Chris Murray anymore. Yes, Fran McCaffrey's done a really good job of not like having these crazy highlight recruiting classes. And oh, Luka Garza is a three-star and he turns out to be the national player of the year. And the Murray brothers, not saying they weren't bad recruits or just complete nobodies, but they come in and ones of were they both first round picks? I know that Keegan obviously was a lotto pick, but was Chris a first
went
round pick
in
last
the
year?
20s last year?
Yeah,
I believe
both first round picks, not to that level, but like Philip Rabracha was a really nice player last year for them, or at least a pretty solid role player, a guy that could start and belong on the floor as a big man in the Big Ten. You take those out of consideration. Yes, Tony Perkins is back, a guy that lit you up for 30. There in Iowa City last year. They get Patrick McCaffrey back. Sanford's back. I think in general, my overall thought is Iowa should take a decent step back and probably be kind of a tournament bubble team, maybe just on the right side of it. But then again, going to Iowa City is a really tough place to play.
I think Iowa is still going to be in the thick of things. I just think Fran McCaffrey's always going to have a team that's going to score. I think this Iowa team is going to be one of the best offensive teams in the conference still. Tony Perkins has proven he can, obviously, Illinois fans know that from last year, but I think he's kind of going to have the offense catered around him this year. And as we've seen with the last three guys that Fran McCaffrey has catered his offense around, they put up crazy numbers. Sanford's a good shooter. They bring in the big man from Valpo, Ben Krike, or if that's how you say it, who averaged like 20 a game, offensively capable big man that kind of fits Fran's style perfectly as a big there. I think they're still going to be a tournament team. I don't think they're going to be great. I mean, they weren't great last year either, but I think they're still going to be in the mix there. I think that game is going to still be two tournament teams battling it out for seeding and for whatever else it is there on that March 10th game.
A team that was not good last year, Illinois has now reeled off six in a row against them in a series after at one point losing 15
Well, they
straight.
Did lose last year to snap that. Didn't? Oh, are you?
Oh, I was talking about Wisconsin.
Talk about Wisconsin.
Yes, but you're right.
Sorry, I thought you said Iowa. My bad.
Illinois had won, what, four in a row against Iowa? Four or five?
They did.
And then Iowa was able to get them last year in February there at Carver. But yes, Wisconsin, Illinois has beaten six times in a row. Wisconsin had previous to that reeled off 15 straight, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And the Badgers did not go to the tournament last season. Returned pretty much everybody from that team. And now, when you look at them on paper, they look like a decent squad. I really liked Connor Asesian last year. He was a freshman. He was an all-freshman team in the Big Ten type of guy. I think coming in as a sophomore, he can be a really, really nice player. Tyler Wall's back. Chucky Hepburn. Is he great? No. Is he a solid starting point guard in the Big Ten at the very least? I would say yes. They added A.J. Storr from St. John's. Like, I think that's a decent tournament squad in terms of Wisconsin. And then you're on the road. And in March, I think that's a tough game.
Yeah, I'm still kind of skeptical about Wisconsin. I think there is something to be said about continuity and bringing a roster back and adding a piece that I think is kind of the perfect addition for them in A.J. Storr from St. John's. But I don't know, like Chucky Hepburn still running the show on offense there. I'm just out on him. I don't think he's very good. I think Wisconsin would be a much better team if they ran things more through Asesian and Storr, which yeah, hopefully they will do. The front court, I feel like, is... It's not one of the worst, but it's also not one of the best with Wall and Crowell. Like they're both okay.
Did Crowell play really well here last year? Am I misremembering that? Maybe he didn't.
He might have. He had a couple massive games where he was in the 20s scoring-wise, just kind of went nuts. But it should be a solid team. It's going to be a team that's going to make the tournament. They missed the tournament last year. I think they did enough just bringing that continuity back and then adding a piece like they did. I think they'll be in the tournament, but I don't think that's a team that you stare down a trip to Madison like, oh, I'm terrified of this one. I still think very winnable game.
For sure. Yeah, 20-12 for Stephen Crowell here in Champaign last year. That was a ranked Badgers team that showed up because they had beaten Marquette.
That's right.
They were, I think, 11-2 going into that game.
They lost on a fluke buzzer beater to Kansas in the battle for Atlantis, I think.
Good call. And Illinois was able to win that game. Unfortunately, really, Illinois didn't have any quad one win at home, I don't think. I don't think they had one opportunity.
Indiana
was the only opportunity. So looking – one last note. I know we got to catch a break here, but one last note in looking at the schedule, you're going to have some opportunities at home to get some wins that actually really matter on your resume. It's going to start with Marquette. That's a massive game early in your schedule. When you play Purdue, Purdue's going to be – projected as the conference favorite, a team that we'll see where they end up in some of these preseason polls. But I mean, Bart Torvik has them as number one in the country going in. I'm not at that level, a team that lost in the first round of the NCAA tournament. But if you beat Purdue on your home floor, that will be a big deal. Oh, by the way, it's senior day. Michigan State, you get them on your home floor. And then I think we'll see what Indiana looks like. We'll see what Maryland looks like. We'll see what Northwestern looks like. Of those teams, I'd probably pinpoint Maryland and say, that's one that if you beat them here at the end of the season, that could look like a nice win too. So that's something too that's different about this schedule is that at least at the outset, it seems like there's more chances at home to have wins that really matter. Well, last year, that was really lacking.
Yeah, Wade on the U of I line, I think text line said, where does KenPom have Illinois preseason? I don't think that KenPom has preseason rankings yet, right?
Right.
But Bart Torvik has him at 29th.
Yes. If you go off of Bart Torvik, and I'll do this really quickly before we catch a break. Bart Torvik has Purdue number one in the country, Michigan State eighth. In terms of the third best team in the Big Ten, they do have Illinois at 29th. You've got Wisconsin at 31st, Indiana at 32nd, Northwestern at 36th. Maryland 38th, Ohio State 40th, Iowa, that would be 46th, and it goes down from there. So
they're higher on Illinois than I would maybe think, although I guess it's more of a – isn't it more of a kind of – to me, at least, it feels like it's more of an individual parts on the team as opposed to, like, it's not considering the fact that Illinois doesn't have a point guard.
Yeah, right. I don't know if that – There's no formula for that and these analytic projections. But, yes, the parts. I would agree with that. And I think also it speaks to a top-heavy Big Ten.
True.
Purdue, Michigan State, and then the next tier, Illinois, Wisconsin, Indiana, the Northwestern. Those teams have decent amount of question marks. Maryland in there as well. I'm higher on Maryland than probably this projecting. I put them over Northwestern, probably Indiana. But anyways, we can talk more about that as we go along. We're going to talk football. We're going to hear from Aaron Henry, Barry Lenny Jr. before we get out of here. Then Aaron Lemming is going to join us on the Tapman's Towing phone line from the Bear Report to talk about the atrocity that's been the Chicago Bears. Stick with us. This is The Drive.